Welcome into a daily editorial here in the KE Report, chatting with Chris Temple. And Chris, let's first start off talking kind of generally about markets and even looking at the energy sector, where we're seeing a bit of a pullback today. Nothing too severe, but we do have the Dow down about 140 points, the S&P down about 16 points, and the NASDAQ down about 60 points. That is also with crude down about 25 cents. So overall, we're seeing a little bit of a consolidation across the board. Is this maybe something more that we should expect? Something, well, I guess you and I have talked about in the last few weeks, more of a natural type of market where investors need to be much more selective and can't expect for any one thing just to be going up?
Well, Corey, look, we had extreme optimism much of last year, then extreme pessimism that started with energy and continued with basic materials and then finally caught up to the broad U.S. stock market in a big way at the end of the year. Now we've gone back the other direction in one fell swoop. You know, we saw oil add back $10 or $11 a barrel, whatever it was, from bottom to the recent trading top. We saw the stock market race back up to where the S&P got near a key level at 2600, where I suggested it was going to stop for a while and we're going to have to consolidate. So, I think that people are always looking for easy answers. You know, the perma bears all want to listen to, you know, the Dents and the Prectors and the Stockmans that we're all going to go down into an deflationary toilet bowl. We're all circling the bowl, getting ready to get flushed, and the Dow's going to go back to 8,000, gold's going to go to 400, and all the rest of this stuff. You know, the other extreme is that we're going to have hyperinflation and gold's going to 5,000 an ounce when everybody dumps the U.S. dollar. And neither one of those are the true scenario. I don't believe that we're heading toward. Or for the time being, we're going to have something in between. It's not a dramatic story. It's not a soundbite, but it's a traditional two-way investing market where we've got to all get used to the fact that the world is choking on what Jeff Gundlach this weekend called an ocean of debt. You can't have substantial economic growth any place, not even here anymore, when you've got such huge debt levels already. Policymakers are going to try and keep things at relative equilibrium, and you're going to have for some time to come perhaps this slow, dull ache of a marketplace where there's no easy answers, there's very little easy money to be made, and you're going to have to roll up your sleeves and behave like an investor again, like we all did years ago. And nobody thought anything of it. You looked at things based on demographics, based on profits, based on revenues, based on growth, based on how well Company A does versus Company B in its same industry, who does the best against their competitors, and so many other traditional factors that people threw out in the recent past, because all you had to do is close your eyes and buy the triple Qs or buy the FANG stocks because the Fed was going to make all your bets good. Well, we don't have that, at least for the time being. And until something happens to push the Fed back into quantitative easing and papering over everybody's problems, and that time will come, but maybe not as soon as people think. Then until then, we look at, you know, something like the crude oil price. Where should it be fundamentally? It should probably be a bit higher still than it is right now. But after we had this consolidation recently and the spike rather recently, and especially for a lot of the energy stocks that have been beaten and bloodied half to death the end of last year, they all had big rebounds. Now everything's going to digest. We'll pull back a little bit and figure out where everything should be priced based on the kind of world that we're in.
Your comment on that slow, dull ache for the markets, I think, can also be carried over to different economies around the world. Just look at the data we saw out of China this week that turns out that exports down 4.4% year over year, imports down 7.6% year over year. These are some numbers that exceeded to the downside expectations and just talks about how much the economies around the world continue to struggle, which is obviously playing a part in this general dull ache for the markets as well, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, you know, copper finally decides it's going to try and rally, and this morning it's going the other direction because chiefly of that China news. But again, when you've had countries become so dependent for nearly a decade now and all this zero interest money, all this quantitative easing and all the rest, even when you slow that down, it doesn't have to go away. even when you slow that down, you've created bigger debt burdens, bigger nuts that the companies and individuals have to cover every month or every however often they do it, from interest payments and debt service and so forth. And so, you know, barring any major new fiscal or economic monetary stimulus, you're going to bog down here for a while. And again, that doesn't automatically mean that we have another deflationary crash. I know that's the fun headline. I know that's the dramatic one everybody wants. And again, and I've said it a million times, Corey, we live in a world where we could have something like that tomorrow. Some outside event comes out of left field, or some hedge fund or counterparty zigs when they should zag, and they take half of the world's financial institutions with them. We don't know when or if that's going to happen. It could at some point again. But barring that, we're going to be in this extended period of time, which we're already entering. It's already happening sooner in some overseas markets, most notably China, where we're going to bog down, and it's going to be very difficult to make any kind of a case for easy growth. You're going to see a lot of consolidation. You're going to see a lot of continued weakness. Profits are going to come under pressure. You know, everybody's making a big deal this morning when Janet Yellen, the former Fed chair, comes out and says, well, she thinks the Fed is done with rate hikes. Well, you know, what a great revelation, you know, to someone like her. So, you know, this is going to be a period of time when, you know, and when I first got into this business, Corey, and I said this to you the other day, we were at the end of what had been about a 15 or 16 year period of time where the stock market went sideways. It'd go up and down, but it was going nowhere. From the mid 60s, when the Dow first hit 1,000, until 1982, when it got through 1,000 and kept going, actually into 1983. But between those two periods of time, there were one or two other times that I think the Dow got up around 1,000 and it pulled back, and it just went sideways for a while. So the best, I think, that we can expect as investors is that we've already started down a road of another period of time where, looking just at the stock market indices, you're going to have subpar returns historically, but the risks, of course, being to the downside if an accident happens someplace.
Now, how do you think the Fed likes an environment where, say, we get the market consolidating sideways, not dropping out of bed, but sideways with a little bit downward bias?
Well, I don't think the Fed would mind that at all. Jay Powell has made that very clear. What finally got his attention recently is it was starting to turn into more than that. They don't want an uncontrolled decline in stock valuations, and they certainly don't want the signs that were also emerging in recent months, most of them outside of the United States, where you had big gaps being blown out in dollar-based versus non-dollar-based funding, in Europe's version of LIBOR, and in some instances where even in the U.S., the leveraged loan markets, as these investment houses slice and dice and repackage all the latest crap that they're selling, like they did with mortgages a decade or so ago, all of a sudden there weren't any buyers for this stuff. That's what gets the Fed's attention. So if you're looking just at the market generally, as long as everything stays liquid, it's not going to upset the Fed one bit if we've already seen the highs of this cycle for the major stock market averages, and we don't see them again for 10 years. That won't bother the Fed as long as everything stays liquid and as long as everything slugs its way out within the marketplace. But most of all, as I've said many times, as long as everything is liquid, they'll have to take action when all of a sudden things start to get illiquid again.
Exactly. And that's what you hear from a lot of these almost gloom and doomers, is that the Fed's going to have to take action tomorrow, when fact of the matter is they're going to wait for a bigger, more severe market pullback. Chris, let's also take a quick look at the gold sector, because there was some more, I consider, pretty major news that came out of the top end of the companies, the majors, Newmont and Goldcorp, going through a business combination. This is very similar to what we saw just last year with Barrick and Randgold consolidating their operations as well. What do you take away in a sector like gold, where we're seeing the largest companies in the sector start to join forces and combine?
Well, look, number one, the producers in the gold space have been under extraordinary pressure for being horribly inefficient operators. John Paulson, very notably, has actually put together an effort to try and get more accountability out of corporate boardrooms in the gold space. That has put pressure on everybody. So the first answer as to why this is happening is that supposedly between Newmont and Goldcorp joining forces, they're going to save $100 million a year in various synergies and whatnot. So that's always part of the process of any two large companies in the same industry joining forces, is that they cut overhead and the combined entity won't spend as much as the two separate ones did. Number two, it also speaks to the fact, and this of course is a sign of how much in the dumps the gold mining stocks still are. I mean, for crying out loud, Goldcorp in recent past is selling for the same price it did when gold was under $400 back in 2003 in that time frame, Corey. A lot of that was deserved. I mean, Goldcorp used to be an easy story to understand. It had the richest gold mine ever known to mankind of its size, you know, in Red Lake. And then it started getting a little bit too aggressive and trying to buy up this and that and everything else. They got overextended. They got a little bit stupid, but they still do have some good assets. My personal opinion is that Newmont is stealing them at this price long term, if you're constructive on gold long term, which I am. And of course, they've got some other metals in play as well. They're stealing this company. But this is one of the things that happens when you're near a major turning point in any market. And even though the investment, the retail investors and institutional investors especially, don't have 5 seconds to devote to looking at the cheap valuations of gold companies, larger gold companies do. And Newmont is obviously making a vote that this is as cheap as they're going to buy a company like Goldcorp, and that it's going to be all upside afterward. And I agree. I mean, I said in the note to my members this morning that I was seriously contemplating if we could get a better technical break in the gold price itself, adding Goldcorp back to my own recommended list, but too late for that now.
It is, but it is very telling about the type of market that the gold sector is in right now when we're seeing these type of consolidations out of the largest producers, because, well, I think it does set them up very nicely for if we do get that technical breakout and those cost synergies, which these companies had come under pressure time and time again for having just too high of costs. So something to consider, and also something to consider for those people that say production costs of gold are X amount and that's why gold needs to go higher. When you see these type of synergies, that brings down a lot of those production costs. So there's always something that the companies can do on their end. But I just think that this is, again, another big story for the gold sector that won't necessarily drive gold price, but might actually draw some more generalist eyes into some of these stocks if they start producing some better numbers. You want to address that to wrap us up?
Well, I think they need to produce better numbers, but I think that there's a couple ways that they'll attract the generalists. First of all, yes, the bottom line results for all of these mining companies have to improve. They have to rein in costs. They have to deliver better performance and so forth. Everybody knows that, and it's one of the reasons why the majors have been so disliked in the recent past. You know, Paulson and his effort has had a lot to do with that. But I am hopeful in this sense, Corey, that apart from what people think that the specific combined entity may do as far as their financials and on an operating basis, what really is nice to consider about this whole story and encouraging, if you think that there's a chance to bring some generalists back in, is that if I'm a guy that's out here, maybe I've had some experience with gold, but I'm trying to look at all the market dispassionately, my first reaction looking at a story like this is saying, holy cow. Here you have, after Barrick and Randgold, you've got another tie-up like this. And to me, whether I'm a gold bug or not, I don't have to have any religious-oriented opinion on the sector whatsoever. This, in any industry where this kind of thing happens, should tell any generalist that, okay, this is as bad as it's going to get, because when you're seeing this kind of activity, it means that you're at a sector bottom. That's what I think people should be taking away from this. Does it mean you get a turnaround next week? No. But it means that especially the mining stocks are just absurdly cheap. And I'd be starting to look for, okay, who's the next Goldcorp? Let's go down the food chain a little bit. who's a near-term producer, who's a smaller producer with a lot of exploration assets, who's going to be the next one on the auction block.
Yeah. Hey, and also look, these mid-tiers, some of them are actually producing very good numbers. And
right
now at the top end, there are fewer and fewer companies. So these large companies are going to start to look, I think, to some of these guys as well. So something to consider. But hey, Chris, good chatting with you. Thanks for kicking off this week on Monday, January 14th.